Welcome to the Podcast Profits Unleashed podcast on Mintwave Radio and all podcast platforms. If you're a coach, consultant, therapist, or healer with an online program and would like to find out how to grow your business whilst having fun podcasting, go to podcastprofitsunleashed.com/free. Let's dive into today's episode.
And we are live. So welcome to the show. Now, today we have Mallory Mayer. And she is a leadership and neuro coach. And so today we're going to be talking about helping leaders to optimize and sustain their leadership performance and cultivate teams that thrive. So I'm your host, Karen Roberts, helping coaches and therapists to get their message heard to the people who need it through podcasting and having fun. So Mallory, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Karen. I'm so looking forward to this conversation and just unpacking a lot of juicy topics and information for your audience too today.
Awesome. So first of all, what inspired you to sort of, and it looks like you cover a lot of modalities, what inspired you to use that particular combination of modalities to help businesses grow in their business?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a journey, to be honest. And I know we were just chatting beforehand of some recent transitions that I've moved through. Specifically, what's really called me forward into this realm and into the focus of the work that I'm facilitating right now is a lot from my period of time when I was in corporate. So I was a HR professional and worked a lot with strategic partners and managers while employees, of course. And really just starting to recognize, especially right now, burnout is becoming an epidemic. And part of the reason why I left corporate was not only from a sense of burnout and a lack of support, but also a lack of feeling really valued for what I had to contribute. It wasn't necessarily seen. And through my own journey and stepping into entrepreneurship over the last 3 years, I built a whole other separate coaching business, and those modalities that we're talking about, being hypnotherapy, being Reiki, being a lot of neurosomatic exercises to really help us regulate, it brought me back into a greater sense, not only of connection within myself, but really seeing these opportunities that allowed me to come into a place of calm and to essentially, I'll call it like homeostasis, where I could feel replenished and renewed. And it wasn't constantly this grind of waking up every day tired and exhausted and not necessarily relying on coffee just to fuel me, but I had exercises that could really support me. Kind of full circle in the breadth of my journey to revisit executives or leaders in this capacity to support them in sustaining their health and sustaining the performance that they want to deliver in coming in words and having resources to really support that too.
And what do you think is the reason that, and I'm sure you're not alone there, people hear it all the time, people coming up against burnout when they are in corporate. What do you think the reason is?
There's a few reasons. The main reason that I look at is everything that I do is very rooted in our nervous system. And I preface that because the reason why I think this arrives is our nervous system will always choose a familiar chaos over an unfamiliar bliss. So an example of this would be, let's say, you love working hard as a leader. And I say this because I was there too. Like, I loved working hard. It really validated a lot for me. But in a subtle sense, it was also an addiction to anxiety and to that burnout. And this is where my nervous system was very familiar with that, in the sense of this mentality. Even how I grew up was like, there was little patience in my home environment, in the society that I was within. There was always like this element of rushing. And really, if you don't keep up, you're going to be forgotten or you're going to be gone. So the way that my whole, like the intricacies of my own nervous system and why people may stay stuck in this is because it is so familiar. They have a belief and they have this whole model of they love working hard. And this really actually gives them like a hit of, let's say, dopamine, being in that anxiety, because it actually feels safe. It doesn't feel safe to pause. It doesn't feel safe to slow down. And that's part of it, simply put, at least in that example.
It's an addiction, isn't it? And also, I think, and obviously, I can only speak from a woman's perspective, so I'm not saying that men don't feel it too, but women have a lot of feelings of guilt if they do slow down and or spend time on self-care, because again, I suppose we've been conditioned, not just in corporate, but just in our culture, to be so busy, especially if you've got children. And do you find that many women do have this issue of, yeah, feeling guilty if they do take time out?
Yeah, where it's like that, like you said, that guilt, that shame, that even this ability at times of holding like a martyr kind of approach. So it could be a sense of, I don't need help, and therefore I can keep going, and putting on this like disguise and the mask of continuously going like on that hamster wheel, because they feel like they are a high achiever. They want to be perceived in that way. They don't maybe necessarily know how to communicate their boundaries. But all of this is really coming from that own subconscious and nervous system capacity. And like you very much said too, of very much imprinting from childhood, from society, of if I were to communicate my boundaries, if I were to even indulge perhaps in this emotion of guilt, of shame, that can also be really scary to approach for us. And we don't maybe necessarily want to process what may be at the root of that. So it's trying to keep up. I always use that saying and that phrase of, are you trying to keep up with the Joneses? But it's really just only taking you further back, because that is leading us to burnout. That isn't sustainable in the performance realm. And it's very much an egocentric mindset too.
Very much. How do you help leaders to do this, to optimize their performance and help their teams thrive? Do you have a particular process?
There is a particular process. Like it is very unique and customized for each individual, but I will talk about the forefront of it, because we do need to have a baseline understanding. So the process to begin with is like getting a good tracking and understanding of your zones, which is simply put, mapping out your nervous system. Many of us have never even had the opportunity to map out our nervous system, which strictly just means like when I am, and this is the funny thing too, that really was eye-opening for me, is it's not that we wake up and we're in parasympathetic, we're in calmness, we're in connection and engagement. We're actually in our survival state, in fight or flight. But when we really start to bring in that awareness of our own, to recognize, what are my thoughts when I'm in fight or flight? How do I see the world? How do things shift? And how do I make decisions? How can I, we talk about this autonomic ladder, but how can I bring myself up into parasympathetic? So then I know through that journey, how I can become more engaged and calm and resilient. So that's the very first part, because we need to have that understanding, which will be unique for each individual, to then apply. Here's the inner resources now that would be best for you. But from a very simple process for your audience that I really wanted to bring forward that they could even start to take away today, is a methodology simply known as do your ABCs. And what I mean by doing your ABCs is, first and foremost, let's just arrive in the morning and acknowledge, and this could even be when we're moving through meeting to meeting, it's a great opportunity to do your ABCs, but arrive to a point with your breath where you can bring in connection with your body. So as we're doing this, it could just be like a subtle closing down your eyes for 5 seconds and asking yourself, how do I feel today? And using your name, do I feel like, do I have a sense of awareness where I'm in my body right now? Like, where do I feel tension? Where do I feel expansion? And when we were talking about just briefly there, guilt and shame, where can I accept that I'm holding guilt? And so often, again, it's to meet our bodies where we are at. So where do I feel this guilt right now? And what does it want to present me with to accept? And finding that, for one, within your A, And then we go into a little bit of breathing. So really bringing in a sense of connection to your environment. So even how I'm situated right now, if I was guiding myself through this, I would want to bring my awareness into the pillow that's on my back, the chair that I'm sitting in and situated, and the feet and the soles on the ground, and feeling that deeper connection as I start to bring in more conscious breath. And then from there, your C is curiosity. So back to, why do I really want to get curious, or what is this here to show me? What is this here to guide for me? Maybe I'm going to use the example of guilt. If we're curious around that element of slowing down or expressing my need, that I need 30 minutes in my morning before I take care of the kids or before I set up a meeting at this time, I need this moment for myself. Getting curious around, like, why did it feel so hard to express that? What did that really want to teach me? And how do I want to move forward today to maybe move past and move in a different direction with a different neural pathway, perhaps, I can talk about. But that's the starting point when we're talking about a very clear process for someone to bring forward listening to this that they can invite in.
And it sounds, from what you've shared there, it's really step one is all about being aware of how you're feeling and using tools to bring you into the present moment, focusing on your breathing rather than, so many people are just on autopilot in this fight, flight, freeze situation. So they're just reacting to things. So what you've shared there sounds like it's going to bring people back into the present moment so that they can be proactive as opposed to reactive. Is that the kind of thing that you're looking to achieve there?
Exactly. That's part of a very simple takeaway for them without necessarily having the neural exercises, without necessarily thinking about the further dimensions of their nervous system. Those ABCs are a beautiful starting point, because the process itself, like we were talking about, is when we do map out our nervous system, we create like a safe haven of assurance for individuals, which is really allowing them to have environmental cues when our neuroception, when our nervous system is always detecting threat. So how can they, when they're on a Zoom call, perhaps find that cue of safety? What is it for them specifically that will allow them to remain in that calm, centered place? So they aren't reactive. So there's a greater emotional intelligence built forward in this work. And those all come a lot with these intangible elements of like hypnosis and doing more of like the somatic pieces of the work, which it can be challenging at times to articulate and bring forward, but it's really seeing the evolution of each individual reclaiming parts of themselves that they may have not necessarily acknowledged and accepted in their own process of who they've become, just because of being in that autopilot. We almost forget that we have this power and we are this person, and there's a sense of identity that we mold ourselves into, but it's really, who are you and who do you want to be? Especially as a leader, right? Do you want from a leadership standpoint, I always say there wants to be curiosity, and you want to engage a culture and a room where there is like a safety present. And we don't necessarily define safety for people, but to bring in a level of safety where they will contribute. So that's part of it too, as when we're talking about cultivating the teams that thrive. Do you as a leader have that awareness if someone isn't engaging, if someone isn't contributing into a meeting? And could it be because you haven't necessarily brought forward that sense of safety?
We've been conditioned, haven't we? Things, it's interesting. Have you seen a real change post-COVID with the way people are starting to acknowledge that maybe running things in a certain way and putting so much pressure on employees? Do you think things have changed since then and they've had time to step back and have a look at how they're running things and learning more about the human psyche? And actually you'll get more out of your people if they are calmer and happier and not in that fight, flight, freeze mode?
Mm-hmm. It's definitely been an open dialogue and discussion, especially when we're talking about traditional hierarchies to new hierarchies. Because a lot of the individuals that I've seen through our conversations and that I've been working with do have a tendency to even micromanage, which goes back again to that nervous system of they don't feel safe, essentially, in releasing control. And so that's a process in itself. But why I bring that up is because in this new lack of traditional model within corporate, we have these hybrid structures. We have a lot of more autonomy for employees to work from home. So as a micromanager, how are you not necessarily going to get in your own way? How are you going to still cultivate a space? Like when we really bring in top talent and we invest in them, the worst thing that can happen is that they go somewhere else and you're back at square one. And part of this journey in really being able to understand not only for yourself the language and the fluency of your nervous system, but of course, bring in inner resources that can help you with greater levels of compassion, of empathy, can really help then to see greater levels of attrition because of that ability, even from your own physiology, of how you're broadcasting safety, how you're communicating with your team, how you are creating more proactive measures for open feedback, for empathy, and a very customized approach. That's a part of the shift that I'm seeing is it's not necessarily like a cut and paste kind of here is my team model and here is how we're going to do like performance reviews and feedback, but much more of that individualized, agile kind of way to work with others. And very much depending if you're a new manager going in and taking on a team or you're building a team up from ground zero here, there can be so many fun ways that we really hone in and leverage each employee's uniqueness. And that's going to be very different for their own individual goals that they want to see with that corporation or organization as well.
And I suppose so when you were in corporate, obviously they didn't have anything like this in place. So do you feel that you would have stayed if they did?
I think it's a great question because I would not be here if I had stayed. And that's part of that is I had to leave to go into my entrepreneurial journey to accumulate and to really become embodied in these processes, to really have that light bulb moment, to recognize this is so needed and what a powerful shift it can be, especially when we want to build thriving teams and businesses. But also, if I were to go back in the sense of this was being governed and this work was being utilized, absolutely, because there would have been spaces for me to speak up. There would have been opportunities prevented to check in on a greater level and really just be there to find the value. Like I will say, like part of my journey was, okay, I was given the answers when I asked a question. If I didn't know the ability to solve a problem, I would go and then try to get some feedback on it. But instead of giving me the answer, I want you to empower me to also find the solution here. I don't need it in that sense. And so there was always like, when we're in that, again, autopilot mode, it can be interesting to witness. Are we being reactive in the sake of thinking that we are getting better time metrics out of this? Like I'm saving time in the sense, just giving them the response versus why don't you feel like you have the solution available to you right now? What do you believe could be the next step? Or who do you believe you need to reach out to get this response? And really, again, putting it back on the employee and challenging them and making them more engaged than just, okay, I want this off my plate. This is just easier to tell you what to do right now type of methodology, right?
So what do you think holds people back or companies back from taking on someone like yourself to come in and help with all this?
So to date, sometimes it has to do with one, it could be budgeting. That could be an easy drive. I've also recognized in the last year, there has been more visibility and awareness around emotional intelligence, around really cultivating and wanting to, even for, let's talk about executives, retaining their leaders, like that domino, that ability. But very much sometimes they'll look in-house versus looking externally. So maybe there is already an in-house leadership coach, or maybe there is an in-house training center, and we can just develop what we believe to be supportive to bring in mindfulness more for the team. And it's not to say like mindfulness can be superficial or high, like baseline, but the depth of this work is so much greater. And I think there's just a level of understanding and awareness of what it can really bring forward, because not only is this going to ripple forward for environments of their own in corporate, but it's going to help in their relationships. It's going to help in their own self-advocacy and self-efficacy in other facets of life. It doesn't just have to do with business, but very much instrumental in even how your health, as like in your well-being, your physical health and being can improve, and really bringing in these resources. And it comes with, the other thing is like, it comes with repetition. I think we're in this day and age and we want something so quickly, and we want to be satiated in that sense of, okay, it's one and done. I can do this and I can say that I did this and it's off my plate, or even just that quick gratification. And the work that we do when we're talking about being proactive, especially with some of the breathing mechanics, it's not to, I don't want you to be in a position, I'll put it in this sense, of you're having a very like hyper arousal kind of day. So you're in your fight and flight and you just can't calm down, but you haven't been engaged with your breathing mechanisms or any of those neuro exercises to really be able to center yourself. So that's where there's like that also drastic piece is, I think it's hard because there's a hard commitment at times to say there's time to do the work and there's time to put this in. And it's not sometimes the most glamorous work to put in. Do I want to sit here and breathe? Do I want to sit here and do tapping? Do I want to sit here and just visualize even? Because visualization is a huge tool, part of this too. And I think it's just changing the narrative to recognize how doing it can be so proactive when you have situations arise that could put you into more crisis mode. That makes sense too.
Yeah. And I suppose the whole team have got to be on board, and not everybody is going to be really aware of how all of these different modalities can actually help them. And like you say, it's not just about the business, just because you're bringing it into the business to have an effect on that as the end result, but this mm-hmm. would have a knock-on effect to their whole lives. But yeah, what else holds companies back from doing that? Would that be one of the things, is everybody, the team have got to be fully on board with this, because otherwise it's not going to work, right?
100%. Like having the team, when I think about different structures and organizations, depending on the size of the organization, like I have a little bit of a different mindset because I've been part of very big ones. So there can be a lot of red tape, and it's very much, I've been parts of big ones and health authorities, I'll also say, where there is a lot of getting that green tape of going beyond the red tape to get the green light, essentially. And the politics and some stuff, and it can be very challenging in bringing someone external in if it doesn't meet the cultural needs, if it doesn't fit the bill and the language that they're using. So I have been more in the recent past and in these last few months working with smaller businesses, just because, like you were saying, the engagement, the buy-in is much more easier to bring forward than a larger scale organization. But even if it comes into that opportunity to recognize like the true tangible takeaways of, you have greater creative problem solving when you do feel more connected. You won't have, when we're talking about like metrics of, let's say, sick leave. If you have a lot of like sick leave time, this could be a great resource to take down sick leave, because people actually want to do the work, or they're not getting sick again from the burnout element if they're in a more of a dorsal, that they don't even have the capacity to get the energy to come in or feel like they're well. So there's also like that viewpoint of really seeing it as the value, pretty much would be part of it, is what's the long-term gain, not just the short-term insight, but how this can impact that sick time, the vacation time, recruitment costs, the open, like the retention rates within the business too, to be able to bring people in.
The owner of the company, they need to totally understand the metrics, because yeah, like you say, it is, you've got tangible stuff going on, but a lot of it's intangible, and it's how do you put that across that's going to be a benefit to the company and to the employees. But I suppose you know, you can only keep doing the thing and get testimonials from how things have changed or how happy the employees are within that company after the change. And so do you have any sort of testimonials that you can share about what's happened to people with the changes?
Completely. I think one of the biggest things is just feeling seen. And I think that's all from a human element of we want to be seen in that capacity, and in inviting in this work, not only from being seen by their leader or by their team per se, because it's up and it's downwards. Appreciation and recognition for someone who is in a leadership, right? Like you have these cross-functional elements. So parts of that is even like being seen within themselves of those little elements that maybe weren't serving them. I call it like your glass ceiling. And what we've really recognized is that they've gone beyond their subconscious capacity and they aren't seeing those same problems come forward over and over again. So it might have been feeling like they were hitting themselves like on the wall of finding that they were constantly encountering this, I'll use quotations, of this problem, of this experience. And they were really able to go beyond that finally through this journey because of a greater level, not only of their awareness, but their adaptability to problem solve while having that subconscious. There's a beautiful, I don't want to go too much on a tangent with it, but there's a beautiful reference called the window of tolerance for anyone who is new to this, coined by Dan Siegel. But our window of tolerance, that's been one of the greatest testimonials in our work, is when you have a reference of it, what we see is we have this like window, essentially, of our safe zone. And as we do with the work that we've done is like, we'll stretch your window to build out greater tolerance, to build out greater resiliency from any kind of intervening variable that may come into your day. So let's say all of a sudden they got a notification from their manager, like, I need to talk. Typically, that would send them spiraling, like just getting this message around, what does that mean? Am I going to be terminated? Why do they just want to talk? Why is there no context? All this mental rumination. And so part of this testimonial has been like, I've really been able to see that and not let myself get carried away into the emotions and the fear of what this could be. It's simply, they want to talk. I don't need to create any more drama around that. And that is simply because their window of tolerance, when I'm talking about it in that frame, has expanded to be more resilient to those intervening variables, or even from an employee. I want to talk. Are they going to resign? Did they find a new job? Like all those thought patterns have very truly diminished and have taken that energy away from more so scarcity mindset, from more so the fear in that anxiety, in that anger, while also, of course, being able to communicate boundaries, being able to uphold and deliver without an element of like stress or procrastination, because there is just so much more ease and flow through this work that is curated and generated. And one last thing is just like really recognizing how they take back their time. And that truly comes into with self-care, but also taking back time because they're so much more effective. So they're not caught in the weeds of the work, but they're very much very high functioning in that element. Like I work too with a lot of neurodivergent individuals. So they're already getting distracted. And it's hard to focus, but with this work, there's been a great uptake of how they can rein in and focus and execute engage with their prefrontal cortex to then come back and take back that time to work on themselves.
Mm-hmm. Now, I would definitely relate to a lot of the ultra-focused ADHD. And I found that I have to use things like the Pomodoro technique, which seems to work really well with me. Just little, I have to break things down into specific on my calendar. So I'm going to try 25 minutes focused on that, then take a break. And it is about making small companies, big companies, just aware of what things they can introduce to actually get their workforce to work together and in a happy environment. And what you've just shared there, it does make me laugh because we all do it. But when you can stand back and listen in, you think, yeah, we're crazy. We just create stories out of nothing. And that's probably where all the waste of energy goes. And it's, oh my goodness, if people could just find a way to stop that. And so it sounds like with what you're offering here is taking them through the process with some different tools. You've got lots of different tools in your toolbox to help them. Because it is, when you listen, you think that's crazy. But I can imagine so many people doing that. They get a message from either the boss, or the boss gets it from the employer, and they start creating all these absolute untruths, complete fabrications of what could happen. It's funny. I'm sure we all do it to a certain degree, but again, it's only when you're aware.
Yes.
So coming into these companies and making them know, oh yeah, that's what I'm doing. That's step one, isn't it? That's when they can start to change.
Absolutely nailed it to a T, and equally will laugh because I was there, right? Like the fabrication, the stories, the stress, and that energy that I put into, oh my goodness, like something that was so truly fabricated. And very much recognizing, even as you were saying that, like another example is like, even when we're on Zoom and someone has their camera off, that story that we can create of, are they disengaged? Do they don't, like, we step away and was like, very much caught into, did I say a wrong thing? Or again, it can go down a very interesting tangent for us, but awareness, yeah, and those ABCs can be so fundamental in that starting point to just say, okay, I notice you, but why do I create this meeting? Or how do I know this is true at the end of the day as well? Because the truth, every thought that I have come in, I'll always even just reflect to say, that truth element of, is this fact or is this false? Like true or false? And do I want to engage with it even further?
Can we ever get to a point where we don't do any of that? How long would this take? How long would you work with companies to get the outcome that they're looking for? Like you said, it's going to take work, right? It's going to take consistent effort. Nothing's going to happen like that. But what's the sort of time frame? Or do you think we can ever actually get there? Be completely our tolerance. What did you call it? Our tolerance. Our window of tolerance. That's it. How can we get to this really long window of tolerance? Is it possible?
Yeah, I think that's such a good question because I know only from with clients and with myself, there's always an ever evolving journey. And as much as that window may expand and be a beautiful foyer window at the end of the day from this little bit small window here, it would just be almost like another problem in a sense. Like the more that we can expand, the more that we grow, it's not even a different problem. It could be the same problem, but at a different magnitude of that problem. So that example of you get a note from your executive, maybe you get a note from a very high exclusive, I'm thinking more like a partnership, and someone that is a client of yours, and that can even really impact you in a different way than your team leader. So different situations, but I think from a time perspective, at minimum, what I really recognize when we dive in and we really have individuals that really take the work to be something that is exercised regular and not necessarily just pulled on when they need it, 3 months is my baseline of when you're really going to start to see shifts in not only your interactions, but obviously your output and how you feel. The first month, it's a whole cleanup, essentially, of going through those thoughts, of really seeing, even from projections, what you may have taken on that don't serve you. So it's just a whole recalibration period. In the second month, that's where we're reinstalling new beliefs and opportunities to support you in your growth and understanding as well, to then bring in that newness, that identity that you've always really desired to embody and to hold. So let's say you want to be that fearless mom, but also a great leader. That could really be that person that you become within 3 months. But when I'm thinking about, there's also been opportunities where I've gone in to do some training and workshops. And obviously that's just a day. But going away from that day, clients have in that context tools that they can leverage, a greater understanding. So my hope is that they can still move forward in some capacity to support them, but it's just not necessarily personalized. And it's not, again, releasing, rewiring, recoding, and bringing in a new sense of who they can truly be and have that capacity.
What sort of, when you're talking about leadership, what sort of companies are you getting involved with? Who are you looking for?
Mm-hmm. Very much so, two spectrums. There's the visionary leaders, and the companies that I've really been loving that I've been part of is, I'll call them, they're already on the cusp of consciousness and mindfulness. So it's not necessarily as hard to break in. My background specifically comes from like manufacturing, engineering, a lot with especially the health authorities. And I don't want to say the visionaries and the conscious leaders aren't there, but the corporations that are really looking to see this as a new paradigm and a new age of doing things, those are the corporations that I've been loving to be a part of, where there's already a heightened focus on the well-being, the health, grooming their staff to say, we're not going to sacrifice this element in our business. And even when it comes to their own values and their integrity that they hold as a company, like a sustainability, environmentally friendly, all these little pieces, I really look at the conscious aware companies. And that's where I see a lot of visionary leaders, a lot of almost like entrepreneurs in a sense within that realm too.
So what should the listeners do next?
Yeah, so from a next step, like to really just open yourself up to an opportunity to really get a sense around your nervous system. I'm extending a free nervous system hypnotherapy to invite in a greater level of calm. And even just in taking this opportunity to receive that, asking yourself, doing a little check-in before you get started with that, how do you feel on a scale of 1 to 10, being calm? And then after you leave that hypnotherapy, how are you feeling? And again, this comes with repetition to see changes in your behavior, your reactions. But that is a gift that I would love to extend, and that is available. While also, if anyone has ever felt compelled just to learn more and to talk about this further, how it may help to support them, there are complimentary conversations and calls that I extend if it comes to coaching or if it comes to engagement in workshops.
If you're watching this, if this is being streamed out on YouTube or any of our social media platforms, you will have the link below. So look below, you'll see the show notes and you'll have the link there. But for anybody listening, they might be driving their car and listening to their podcast, where do they go?
The easiest place to find me is LinkedIn, of course, Mallory Meyer, but Instagram, if you really want to just tap in and get some like really fun posts, insights, awareness, I'm at Leader Mindshift on Instagram.
Do you find personally that what you do using podcasts to actually get your message out there, do you find that a great way to, because on paper, people may have one idea of what it is you do, and until you actually come and share with the listeners who you help and how you help, do you find that it's a really good medium to get the message out there?
I do, because more so than anything, the success that I've seen with podcasts, and it's really been fueled by the storytelling element as well. Of people great, or they hold a greater connection with the individual, like the guest, like even the opportunity just to be the host and to lead and to hear you facilitate the conversation. But for myself, it's really been recognized for, oh, that story really resonated with me. I feel like I was there, or I am there currently. And to see where you are right now and the resources that you've used to get there, I'm very curious about this work and I would love to explore that opportunity. So it's been a beautiful gift just to be able to have this capacity to articulate through this type of platform, through podcasts, versus just, of course, a written word where we are asked to condense down to 2,000 words in a post. There's only so much that can be expressed. So I love this medium.
I completely agree, because I can have guests on here and just looking at the bio, I've already created a story, right? I've created a story because I now think I know what it is to do. And that when they actually come on and share, it's like, oh, right. It can be completely different, can't it? Because it could be down to you. I'm not a very good copywriter anyway, so my website doesn't have any much on that. So much easier to do it with the spoken word. And like you say, sharing your story, sharing what inspired you, sharing what it is you do. I do have one question, and that was the polyvagal. Could you explain a little bit? Have I even said that right? Because I was like, what is that?
You have said it perfectly well. Polyvagal. Yes, that's exactly it. It's essentially, so this year I stumbled upon polyvagal, and being polyvagal informed as a practitioner, this is really where we come into different elements of that fluency in that language of our nervous system. It's bringing in different metrics on how to look at heart rate variability, those breathing mechanisms, our attentional control, tracking our zones, high level, just polyvagal being truly how does our nervous system communicate and is engaged in the fight, the flight, the freeze, and how we really, the certification program that I went through is really fascinating because we look at it in finding our own play zone. And there's also, I didn't add this into the certification, but being a play zone pro myself, what this is, when we're in parasympathetic, yes, it's calm, and yes, we are connected and engaged and very much stress-free. However, we want to still have some mobilized sympathetic energy in our bodies to be able to take action, to be able to execute, and to get the task that we need done. And that's where we have this fun little variable in between parasympathetic to sympathetic, where you're not constantly, again, in that fight or flight, where you can't find the calmness, where you can't find connection. It's this synergy. And that's really where we have those resources and the ability to recognize I'm in my play zone where I'm not going to get burnt out, where I'm not feeling angry or aggressive or filled with anxiety, but I'm moving forward. I have the momentum and energy in my body to execute while feeling grounded and calm. So, polyvagal.
Wow. And is that so? Everybody's going to be different. So, it's about finding where you're. Happy places.
Happy place, play zone. Like, I love the play zone metaphor because it can really be extended into like our inner child element as well.
Like that, because you need it. We need a certain amount of, and I don't like even using that word stress, but we just don't need to stay that. We shouldn't be staying there too long. And too many people are in that.
Exactly.
Level for far too long. So by knowing where that play zone is, you can come into it and come out of it again. That makes a lot of sense. Thank you for sharing, because there you go. I've read your bio and I remembered it because I wanted to ask you about that, because you can read things and think, well, what's that? is that? And it's the only way to do it. So thank you so much for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. So if anybody's out there that are leading teams, so any entrepreneurs, no matter what size the team, if you want to get more out of your employees and you want to have a happy place, people to actually thrive and get the job done too, then please get in touch. Thank you for your time. And to the rest of the listeners, I will be back next week. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to today's episode on the Podcast Profits Unleashed podcast. If you're a coach, consultant, therapist, or healer who would like to drive sales whilst having fun podcasting, head over to podcastprofitsunleashed.com/free and find out how you can turn your podcast into a sales machine. We'll see you on the next episode.